Okay, we are on. We're in Rav Kook's commentary on the Agadata, on the Talmud of Masechet Shabbat, Daf Lamed Gimel. And Rav Kook is, we're finishing up the story about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and the cave. Remember, he ran away from the Romans, spent 13 years learning in the cave with his son. He came out, and his skin was covered with a lot of rashes. We spoke about last time, the suffering. And the Gemara continues, and we'll go into share screen, source number one. There we go. Amar, Hoel Vitrachish Nisa, after Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's skin was healed, and he was saved from the Romans, he recognized, he said, being that God did a miracle to save us, Ezelitkin Milta. Let's go and make some kind of tikkun, some kind of fixing some problem for the community. This is the source of, many of you know, say a person, Chalila, is in a car accident or survives an operation, and he makes a kiddush for the whole community. Where does that come from? It comes from this Gemara. And that's what we're going to discuss. Why should I make a kiddush for the community, or donate a parochet, or donate something to the shul in honor of a miracle or a salvation? And the Gemara says, "Dichtiv vayavo Yaakov shalem." You remember Yaakov has finished wrestling with Lavan, with Esav, with the angel, and he arrives shalem, complete, in the city of Shechem. By the way, the pshat of that he comes to shalem, many people say, many commentaries say, that he came to a city near Shechem called Shalem. And in fact, there is an Arab village called Kfar Salem, Shalem in Hebrew, right in the area of Shechem. Anyway, the Gemara darshins that Yaakov came whole after all of his difficulties. The Amar Rav explains, what does it mean, Shalem? He was entire, he was whole. Shalem begufo, he was whole in his body, that he wasn't suffering. Shalem bimamono, he had a lot of money. Shalim b'torato, and that he had a lot of Torah, and he didn't suffer religiously. He wasn't influenced by those who could have influenced him. That is Lavan, in the house of Lavan. Here I'm letting the people in. Okay, hope I can get back. Okay. And then the pasuk continues, Vayichan et pnei ha'ir. And Yaakov settled the city. There's a continuation of the pasuk. It says that Yaakov arrived wholly. Okay, so what does that mean, whole? We said three different opinions. And now it's talking about that he settled the city. What does it mean, he settled the city? I have to admit some more people here. Amar Rav, matbea tiken lahem. Rav says that Rabbi Shimon Bar that Yaakov Avinu minted a new coin as a sign of thanks to God for saving him. Ushmuel amar shvakim tiken lahem. Shmuel said that Yaakov created a new marketplace. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Merchatzo Tiken Lehem, that Yaakov Avinu built a bathhouse. Bikitzur, we see that Yaakov Avinu, there are different opinions of what he donated to the community, but everyone agrees that he donated something to the community as a sign of thanksgiving. And that is where, again, we learn to make a kiddush if a person is saved. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, as a thanksgiving, also wanted to do something for the city. We'll see next time what he does for the city. Paragraph 2. Rav Kook says, Amar hoel vidrachish nisa ezolit kin milta. being that God did a miracle to save us, I want to donate something to the city like Yaakov Avinu. Ra'ui la'adam lahakir tamid et gdulat ha'erech shel haklal. A person should always recognize, even when he's celebrating an individual private salvation, he should always remember the true value is in the community, in the communal, in the national, not just in himself. Ad she'ameorot gdolim yoter mechuvanim yiyu bedarkei chayav imimtza lehem kishur be'eze inyan klali. That a person, if he connects his personal salvation with a national or communal salvation, it will shift everything into a much higher gear. Now, the way that this Gemara is usually explained is, I brought for you, in source 3, the tour. He comments, V'shamati mi'achi Rav Yechiel, in the name of his brother, Tam ledavar lefi shamoadim nitkenu keneged avot. That the three festivals, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, are according to the three fathers. Pesach keneged Avraham, dichtiv lushi vasiyugot, Pesach haya. That Avraham made matzot when he entertained his guests, the Bedouins, the angels. That was Pesach. Shavuot keneged Yitzchak, shetkiat shofar shel matan Torah haya b'shofar meilo shel Yitzchak. That the shofar which was blown at Mount Sinai on Chag HaShavuot was, according to this midrash, from the ram of Akedat Yitzchak. Sukkot keneged Yaakov, dichtiv lo mikneu asa Sukkot. And we celebrate the holiday of Sukkot in commemoration of Yaakov, who built Sukkot for his animals. Now, obviously, the question is, what's the big deal that Yaakov Avinu built Sukkot for his animals? So the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, in Source 4, on that Pasuk in Sefer Breishit, Lamed Gimel Yud Zayin, on the Pasuk says, V'Yaakov nasa Sukkota, Yaakov traveled to Sukkot, V'yivin lo bayit, and he built a house, Ulmiknei wasa Sukkot. For him and his family, he built a house. For his flock, and remember, he had a lot of flock, he built Sukkot, booths. Alken kara shem amakom Sukkot. And that is why he called the name of the place Sukkot. Ve'im tomar ve'chi bishvil she'asa sham Yaakov suka yikarei l'makom chen. Who cares why that Yaakov, why is it so significant that he built Sukkot for his animals, and that's why we celebrate Sukkot, and that's why the name of the place is Sukkot? Ulai ki asa davar chadash b'chemlato ala mikne, ma shelo asach en adam kodem shiachin suka lebeimot. Beforehand, apparently people treated animals like animals, and they used to sleep outside in the cold. Yaakov Avinu was nice enough to build Sukkot for his flock. V'lishinui chadash kara makom alav. And apparently this idea of being moral to animals was so nice that he called the place Sukkot. Now, what's hiding behind here? And again, what we said, that Sukkot is in memory of Yaakov Avinu's building Sukkot. Notice what's happening here. This is a classic example of midah keneged midah, and mitzvah goreret mitzvah, that one mitzvah causes another, which causes another. Hare Yaakov had mercy on his flock, so he built Sukkot. Now, because Yaakov had mercy on his flock, God, as a reward, built us Sukkot in the desert. And in commemoration of God's protecting us with Sukkot in the desert, every year for 7 days we sit in Sukkot. In other words, Yaakov's Sukkot caused God's Sukkot, which caused our Sukkot. And this is the classic explanation of why a person should make a Kiddush and donate something to the community when God saves him. God saved me, and he did a chesed, a kindness to me, so I should do that to the whole community as well, to be godly. That's the most common explanation. Rav Kook is not going in that direction. Rav Kook, again, he's saying that everything is connected to a much higher level when it is communal and not just individual. Let's go back to source 2, where Rav Kook is continuing in the today's Ein Yaakov, Ein Ayah. Second line in source 2. Al ken, bizdamen la adam hatzala gdola. When a person is saved, rabat alila hatofeset makom gadol b'chayav, if a person is significantly activated by this salvation, lo yaspiklo, he's not just going to celebrate himself or celebrate with his family, lo yaspiklo sheyitzamtzem pu'lato rak b'chugo haprati, ki im yeda she'me'ora gadol yesh lo vaday inyan ledavar gadol. A significant occurrence is so significant it should be connected with a larger scale. Vadavar ye'az gadol, and then if you connect your personal salvation with something larger, with the community, then it will really be something big. Kesheyimashech mimenu yachas l'tova klalit, and especially when you in turn do something good for the community. Al ken hoil vitrachish nisa ezel itkin milta. What is Rav Kook saying here? How is he explaining this Gemara? So, as is often the case, Rav Kook is a package deal. And in Orot HaKodesh, in Source 5, Musar HaKodesh, page Kuf Mem Zayin 147, Rav Kook explains this concept of connecting the individual to be part of the communal, to be part of the national, to be part of something big. Hayesod HaKlali, the basics of being communal-minded. Not to be self-centered, not to be egoistic, but to think of the klal. Ha'adam tzarich lechalitz tamid mimizgurotav apratiyot. A person has to constantly struggle to break out of his selfish framework. Now notice, what is Rav Kook saying here? Very interesting. God doesn't make mistakes. So if God created us as self-centered, there must be a reason why. And if it's good to be self-centered, why should we try and struggle constantly to break out of our self-centeredness? What Rav Kook is obviously saying is that God created us with a natural drive of the survival instinct. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. And your stories of people, kids 5, 6 years old in the Holocaust who managed to survive themselves. And this survival instinct is super strong. And it's a great chesed that God gave this to us. That you can't sleep for me. You can't eat for me. And this educates us from a young age to take care of ourselves. The problem is, some people never grow up. They never grow out of that self-centeredness. And that's why Rav Kook is telling us, again, your self-centeredness to take care of yourself is important. God created us that way. Im ein ani li, mi li. If I don't take care of myself, who's going to take care of me? That's the basis. But we, being that it's such a strong nature, and we have a tendency, you always have to remember, am I naturally leaning in this direction or this direction? If the Rambam says we should always end up in the middle, so I have to know if I'm on this extreme, I have to move left, and if I'm on this extreme, I have to move right. So on which extreme am I? Rav Kook is pointing out, we all have a tendency to be self-centered, and the way to get to the middle point is by becoming more selfless, becoming more altruistic. Again, back to source number 5. Ha'adam tzarich lechaletz tamid mimizgorotav ha'pratiyot. A person has to constantly struggle to break out of his selfish framework. Ha'mimal'ot et kol mahuto, which tends to fill all of our essence. It preoccupies us all the time. Ad shekol rayonotav sovevim tamid rak al dvar goralo ha'prati. We look at most people in the world, and we see that most of their ideas, most of that which preoccupies them, is all about me, myself, and I. Shezel morida ta adam lo omek hakatnut. This lowers a person to live a life of smallness. Ve'en ketz li yisurim gashmiim veruchaniim hamesuvavim mizeh. There is no end to the pain that a person causes himself, both physical and spiritual, by this self-centeredness. Now, what does Rav Kook mean when it says that we live a life of smallness? Like is often the case, Rav Kook has that there's a double meaning here of smallness. First of all, literally, a life of smallness is, you can all ask yourself honestly, does anybody really care what shirt I wore today? Does anybody really care what I ate for supper today? Most of our lives are around, what am I going to eat? What am I going to wear? What am I going to do? And if you think of that in proportion, who really cares? A person whose life surrounds around his own selfish interests, he's really living a life of smallness. So that's the first act of smallness. But there's a second point of smallness. Smallness is immaturity. And where Rav Kook is pointing out here something very interesting, that all of life is a constant development to be less selfish, to be more altruistic, to be more selfless, to think of others, right? When we're young, as we said, God creates us to take care of ourselves, the survival instinct. When we grow a little older, we learn to share with our friends, share with our brothers usually, afterwards with our friends. Afterwards, we're ready to start developing a relationship and then marry. What is marriage? It's 50-50. You give to her, she gives to you. Afterwards, you're ready to have children, which is just giving, giving, giving. In other words, as we climb in life, as we mature, another way of saying maturity is to be giving. And if a person never grows out of his self-centeredness, Nebuch, he is living a life of immaturity. He's living a life of smallness. And Rav Kook says, this is not productive. If you think about it, all of us have learned Sifrei Musar. Whether it be Mesilat Yesharim or Chod Tzadikim, Chovot Al Vavot, most of you probably have noticed that enemy number one in all of the books of character traits, enemy number one is arrogance. And its twin, Kaas, anger. And there is definitely more chapters written about arrogance, which leads to anger, right? When does a person get angry? If things don't go my way, or you don't go my way. And on the other hand, the most important midah is anava. Who is the most complete person who ever lived? Moshe Rabbeinu. How is Moshe described? Ve'ish Moshe anav me'od mikol adam asher al pnei adama. Moshe Rabbeinu is the most humble of all people, which means that if he's the most complete of all people, he has to be the most humble of all people. If so, we have to understand why humility is so important and why arrogance is so problematic. We all know that it's unpleasant to be around arrogant people. Socially, it's a lot more pleasant. People have friends if they're humble, if they're thoughtful, if they're giving. We know also Ben Adam Le Chavero. If a person wants to fulfill half the Torah, which is social mitzvot, it's by being humble and giving to others. The same thing with Ben Adam Le Chavero. Somebody who is arrogant, he has problems taking orders, not only from his boss, not only from his parents, not only from the rabbis, but from God, right? I want to eat a cheeseburger. Don't tell me what to eat. And so arrogance is a religious problem. It's a social problem. It's a moral problem. But as we're going to see, it's even stronger than that. Let's see Rav Kook in source number 6, where he elaborates even more. This is from Orot HaKodesh, page Taf Ayin Vav. Ha'anava v'akarat emet. Humility and a true evaluation. A true recognition. Ha'anava manmicha et ha'da'at ha'elyona shel ha'adam. Humility lowers a person, lowers his high knowledge, umorida et ora la'omek umka shel nishmato, and it deepens the godly light into his soul. Va'yedeze makir hu et ha'emet la'mita. A person gets to know himself when he can put himself in the proper proportions, in the proper priorities. How important is I? Am I? How important is Am Yisrael? Right? And the Rav Kook goes on, V'chol ha'deyot ha'ro'ot v'toldotehen, all of the bad opinions and their ramifications, V'chol minei darkei avodah zarah, all of the idolatry in the world, Hakol novim he mimakor ha'mashchit shel ha'ga'ava. It all comes from arrogance. Why? To understand the concept, we have to remember the famous question of the Ramchal in Da Tvunot, where he asks, why did God create the world? And obviously, the problem with any answer that you suggest is that it can be slugged up. Because if you suggest God created the world because he wants us to do the mitzvot, well, that infers that God needs our mitzvot. That can't be. God is perfect. If you want to say that God created the world because he felt like it, well, that can't be, because God doesn't feel like anything. He doesn't need anything. The Ramchal says, based on the Kabbalah, that the only possible answer for why God created the world is Olam Chesed Yibaneh. The world was created for altruism, to give. Why did God want to give? Because it's an ideal to give. And even if he wasn't lacking anything, right, the definition of altruism, of selflessness, is to give even though you don't lack anything, even though you're not gaining anything. What's the epitome, Chazal always say, of chesed shel emet? Right? Lativ im abriot. Chesed shel emet is to be a member of the Chevra Kadisha. Why is that considered the ultimate chesed? Because it's altruistic. Because he's not going to pay you back. The dead person is not going to say thank you. Truth is, even the family doesn't usually remember to thank the Chevra Kadisha. And if so, why did God create the world? Because he wants to give. Even though he wasn't lacking anything, he likes to give. Now, when God wants to give, what's he going to give? All right, when Bill Gates goes to a wedding, he doesn't just give a challah cover. Bill Gates gives a very serious gift. Now, kal vachomer, when God wants to give, he's going to give the perfect gift. What is the perfect gift? Nothing in the world is perfect except for God himself. So the question is, how can God give himself to us? And all of you, I'm sure, know that is what's called the chilek eloka mima'al. The neshama, the soul, is a spark of God that he gave us. It's called the tselem elokim, the image of God, that man is capable of copying God. Tselem elokim litzalem is to copy. It's from the shorish tsel, shadow. Now, the shadow, when I move my hand, my shadow copies me. That doesn't mean my shadow is me, but my shadow does what I do. So too, when we emulate God, what's called, we spoke about once at length, imitatio Dei, imitating God, mahu rachum, what God is rachum, so we have to be rachum, God is kind, we are kind, God's merciful, we are merciful. That imitatio Dei, that copying of God, that is realizing our potential. Now, if we're to summarize what we've seen till now, why did God create the world? Because he's altruistic. He wants to give. What does God give? The perfect gift. What is the perfect gift? Himself. How does he give himself to us? By letting us copy him, giving us a spark of God. Final question. Okay, so how do we copy God? What does God do all day? The answer is complete the cycle. He's altruistic. So when I am altruistic, I am being godly, and I am fulfilling the goal of creation. When a person gives to their family, when you help your spouse, when you help your children, when you help your parents, when you volunteer in the community, when you help Am Yisrael, when you go to Miluim, when you go to the army, whatever it is, that is being godly. And accordingly, we now understand how Rav Kook always looks at klaliut as giving, as altruism, breaking out of my self-centeredness as a godly ideal, as the godly ideal. Now, this is so important, A, to understand our Gemara. What is Rav Kook saying? Why does Rav Shimon Bar Yochai want to donate something to the city because God saved him? Because who am I? If I just look at the fact that God saved me, it's not such a historically significant act. But if out of this, I will give something to the community, like Yaakov Avinu, he minted a new coin, he built a new marketplace, you donate a parochet to the shul, even giving a kiddush to the shul, that already shifts the entire occurrence to a higher level. Now, we can't finish this topic without adding one more point that Rav Kook's top student, Rav Charlap, mentioned so beautifully in source number 7 in Sefer Mimaneya Yeshua, Amud Yud Bet. Source number 7. Kishemagia tor hidgalut sa'adei hageula. When the time for the appearance of the footsteps of redemption comes. We all know the term, the footsteps of redemption, where you hear the footsteps coming of Mashiach, but he's still around the corner. You don't see him yet. When the time for the revelation of the footsteps of redemption is coming, Reshita Tshuvahi, what is the beginning of return? What is the beginning of return? Lashuv ulakitz michadash et musage aklal ane'elam shel Yisrael. Ulitna'er la'at la'at me'apratiyut, shemitoch ze yachdilu kalil kol ha'chata'im va'ivutim. Rav Charlap here is mamash paraphrasing Rav Kook that we just read before in Source 6, that the source of all problems in the world is self-centeredness. And the key to redemption is to shake off our self-centeredness and to revive the aspect of nationalism, or what we call today in modern Hebrew, Tzionut, Zionism. One of the reasons that Rav Kook is a Zionist is exactly what we're learning today. Because if I have to choose between living a life of smallness or being connected with something large, that should not be a difficult decision. I remember at one of the largest Hafganot, I don't remember what it was for, afterwards there were sort of 100, 200,000 people there, and at the end of the Hafganah, I remember, we sang Ani Ma'amin and Hatikva, and I remember I just started I had a chill up my spine, and I actually started crying when I heard 100,000 people yell together, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, sing Ani Ma'amin, sing the Hatikva. To be part of something big is so much greater than to be part of something small. And, again, it's a matter of maturity. Immature people are self-centered. Mature people more and more are giving. And that's what family life is about. And that's also what nationalism is about. I always tell my students about way back, must have been 25 years ago, that we had two girls over, two students over from one of the midrashot where I teach. And we were talking at the Shabbos table. And one of the guests asked my son, Netanel, he was like 10, asked him, what do you want to be when you grow up? Now, for a 10-year-old boy in Israel, he thought the question was, what do you want to do when you get to the army? So he said, I want to be a tzanchan, I want to be a paratrooper. So my daughter, Ashira, if Netanel was 10, so Ashira must have been like 5, she asked, what's a paratrooper? So Netanel explained, and he said, they're very brave soldiers, and they jump out of the airplanes, and as they're landing, the enemy fires at them, but they land behind the enemy lines, and Ashira says, I don't want you to be a paratrooper. That sounds dangerous. To which my 10-year-old son answered, very matter-of-factly, and it blew the guests away. He said, yeah, it's dangerous to be a paratrooper, but if we're not willing to endanger our lives, we're not going to have the state of Israel. And these two 18-year-old students were blown away with the fact that a 10-year-old growing up in the land of Israel is preoccupied with altruism. Do you know that it's not a coincidence that the state of Israel has the highest rate of volunteering of any country in the world? Because when you grow up in the framework of the state of Israel, it's not a question, am I going to give 2-3 years in the army for Am Yisrael? Am I willing even to give my life for Am Yisrael? It's just a question, am I going to do it in the tanks? Or am I going to do it in the Air Force? Or am I going to do it in Sanchanim? Or if a girl is going to do 1 year of Shirut Lumi or 2 years of Shirut Lumi? Am I going to do it absorbing Aliyah? Or working in special needs or special ed or whatever it is? But here the norm is to be altruistic. I remember on the way to school, when I was a kid, my father was the principal. He used to drive us to school. We would always leave the house at 8 o'clock and listen to the news. And you listen to the news. What is the news? There's a fire here. There's a murder there. There's a kidnapping here. There's a war there. And then you go to school and you play basketball and you go to class and you really couldn't care less about the news. In Israel, when you hear the news, and there was a fire in a Jewish home in Rishon LeZion, that's my brother. And if there's a war in the north or the south, even if I don't live in the north or south, I have to go and fight, and I have to be worried. Because anything that happens in the state of Israel is my problem. And we remember when Gilad Shalit was kidnapped, the entire state of Israel was at the edge of their seats. When I live in a Jewish state, in the context of a Jewish state, every time that I drive and I see a Trumpist, he's my brother, and I stop and pick him up. And every time I see a car with a problem pulled over to the side, I have to see if I can help. Now, it's not easy to live your life on such a high flame of altruism that everything that happens, I have to feel, and I have to ask, what can I do to help out? But that is the framework that the Torah has in mind. The Torah is addressing a Jew who's living in the Jewish state, in the Jewish land, that everything that happens around me, in my building, in my community, on my bus, in the news, anything is Jewish. It's mine. It's my brother's. To be part of something big, to have an opportunity to be altruistic all the time, that is what the Torah wants of us. That's to be godly, to be altruistic. My brother-in-law used to live in Burlington, Vermont. And there was no minyan there during the week. They just had a minyan on Shabbat. And he used to say that, I don't have an opportunity to do a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro all week, except from Shabbat to Shabbat, because he doesn't see Jews. He doesn't live with Jews. He doesn't work with Jews. In the state of Israel, that is what Rav Kook is talking about. That even when a person has a personal salvation, it's not a personal salvation. It's a national salvation. And when a person lives his life, it's not a life of smallness, but a life of something big. As we wrote in the heading, a life of greatness with Am Yisrael is a lot more satisfaction, gives a lot more satisfaction, and is a lot more godly, and is a lot more altruistic than living a life of smallness, of just, what am I going to eat? What am I going to wear? And this is how we should live our lives. And now you have a deeper understanding, another reason why Rav Kook was such a Zionist.